Vishnu Sahasranama 48. Padmanabha. This is also among the best known names. Some of the names in Vishnu Sahasranama, they're not very well known, just like one just coming up. Stavishta is not a well known name. But Padmanabha is one of the very common names. It's a name which is, well, until recently, until India became what it is today, it was a name commonly given to male children. There's also the one of the most famous deities in India at Tiruvananthapuram, Ananta Padmanabha. And it's a name that we find, by which we find the Lord is referred to and addressed as throughout Bhagavatam, Puranas. Now, there are many names of Vishnu which relate to the lotus. There are many words for lotus. Padma is one of the, Padma is maybe the most well known. Some of the names for lotus are generic and some of them are specific to specific types of lotuses. So as there are many words for lotus, and is used adjectively to describe different parts of the Supreme Lord's form. Therefore, he has names like, which literally mean lotus feet, which means that he has lotus feet. Lotus, navel, lotus eyes, lotus face, and so on. So yeah, there are many names, well-known names, just like that well-known prayer of Kunti Devi. What is that? Namah Pankaja Nabhaya. First she starts off at the... So Pankaja Nabha means the same as Padmanabha. Pankaja being another word for lotus. Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, Namah Pankaja Maline, Namah Pankaja Netraya, Namaste Pankajangrahe. So lotus feet, Kamal Charan. Kamal is also, there's so many words for lotus. Now, this used adjectively, Padma in relation to the Supreme Lord, meaning lotus eyes, lotus navel, lotus feet, lotus face. This generally means that, well, the Lord is compared to a lotus, because the lotus is considered very beautiful. So, although he is the source of all beauty, and he is much more beautiful than any lotus, still the comparison is there. In the case of lotus feet, that has another meaning, that not only are his feet as beautiful as a lotus, but also because his feet are always on the lotus planet of Krishna Loka, which is shaped like a lotus. So that's another meaning. And here Padmanabha is a very important name of Vishnu, because it's not only describing that his navel is as beautiful as a lotus, but he literally has a lotus coming from his navel. Specifically, from the form of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Oh, he's within the universe, so how does that work? Sarva jagata karanam padmam nabho yasya sapadmanabha. From whom all the universe, the origin of all the universes, Mahavishnu. The lotus that is the origin of the universe is from his navel. That person is known as Padmanabha. Now we find the different commentators on the Vishnu Sahasranama. They don't try to substantiate this. They just state it. Whereas in the modern world, we find a need to try to substantiate that because the influence of... well, first of all, outside of India anyway, it's a completely foreign concept. No one can imagine of God having a navel from which a lotus grows. It's not something you could very easily imagine. But the traditional commentators, they just accept it as a fact. It's just, there's no need to substantiate it. I mean, everyone knows, right? I mean, everyone knows, right? You grow up in traditional culture, and you know, the universe comes from the lotus which grows from the navel of Vishnu. It's not something to be discussed or in terms of scientific understanding. It's just a fact, that's all. Everyone knows. So, this lotus stem that's been one of the commentators, he compares that to the umbilical cord. That all the nourishment for the baby, who is a distinct entity, yet produced from and dependent on the mother, and in that sense non-different. Actually, according to Vedic understanding, the child is produced from the father, and the mother is the test tube or whatever, in which the incubation takes place. But the seed of the seed of life is given by the father. The jiva enters via the father's virya, or his energy, which virya means energy, heroism, or semen. So, in the same way, the whole universe is idang hi vishvam bhagavan nivetara. The whole universe is, in one sense, one with and different from Vishnu, but is connected. The connection is there in terms of material, in terms of nourishment. He is the life of the universe. Jagajivan, that is another name of another fairly well-known name of Vishnu. He is the life of the universe. So literally, apart from being the spiritual life force, even he's the material cause of the universe. This is discussed this is discussed in some detail in the third chapter, I believe it is, of Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which it is discussed by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, how Narayana is both the upadana karana and nimitta karana. Nimitta karana means he's the ultimate cause, and upadana karana means he's the efficient cause, is the term given. There must be some philosophical term. Just like it can be said that a potter is the cause of the pot, but it also said, be said, the clay is the cause of the pot. Both are causes, but the one who decides to mold the clay into the pot, he is the ultimate cause or the deciding factor. And the clay, you can't have a pot without clay. So that is also the cause of the pot. So Vishnu is both. He's both the one who decides to do it all, and in one sense the material energy is non-different from him. So that material nourishment, although the material energy also comes from Krishna, that is separated energy, bhinna prakritir ashtadha, separated energy of Krishna, becomes separate, has a different kind of function to that of the internal energy, which is pleasure-giving potency, but the external energy is pain-giving potency. So that is Vishnu's separated energy, and that is transferred through the stem of the lotus. So, the next name, 49, Amara Prabhu, means the Lord of the demigods. Now, there are many names here in Vishnu Sahasranama, which establish Vishnu as the controller of everything. Ishvara, Prabhu, Sarveshvara. In a general way, they establish him as the master and the controller of everything. And there are some names, just like last night I spoke on Hrishikesha, which means the master of the senses. So there are some names which they, in one sense, they're already included within terms like Sarveshvara. He's the controller of everything, which means he's the controller of the senses. This name means, Amara Prabhu means he's the controller or the Lord of the demigods. So it's already included within that. And actually, if you want to say, then you may say, well, why say it, why specify this? Well, why anything? Why not just say Vishnu and everything's included? But the whole idea is to glorify Vishnu and meditate on his qualities by which he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is, he is the Lord of everything, and which means he's the Lord of the insects, and the Lord of the reptiles, and the Lord of the air. But there, those name, I mean, there's no name as far as I know of the Lord of the ants or any such thing. Srila Prabhupada gave two names to Krishna that were not formally there. One is Landanishvara and another is Parisishvara. It's true. It's absolutely true. So why not Zurikishvara? Well, why not? Can be also, but it shouldn't come in Vishnu Sahasranam, because Zurich's not so important after all. Nor for that matter is London or Paris. But in terms of cosmic importance, Hrishikesha, the importance of that name, well, I discussed that yesterday, because as we are sentient beings, our relationship with him is via our senses, which are also in one way are very much non-different from us. Oh, I got a garland. Okay. Now Prabhupada doesn't have a garland. Anyway. Had some pretty enlivening preaching last night, was it? Kicking the demons in the face. Forgot to put your boots on while doing so. You have to learn how to kick them so you don't get injured. Only they get injured. So this name, Amara Prabhu, means the Lord of the demigods. Amara means the demigods, which is a term which is not fully accurate because they do die also, but they're called Amara because they have very long lives. And generally their death is not a nasty kind of death like we have also. Just like there's old age and disease are hardly known in the heavenly planets. And birth is also instant. There's no carrying around a baby in the womb for many months. And then the baby comes out with a lot of pain, but it just happens like that. And then there's no growing up and having to look after the children, and the children going through the diaper stage and adolescence and all these unwanted things. They're just born and they're all ready to go, fully equipped. So death also is generally, unless they get killed by the demons, is not a painful process. So they're called, well, it's painful in the sense that they have to give up being a demigod, but there's no extended physical pain. So, and because they live a very long life compared to the mortals on this planet, they're known as Amara. Although really, because Mara means death, so Amara means deathless. Although really, the real Amara is Vishnu or anyone who's situated in the liberated position of service to Vishnu. So this name means the Lord of the demigods. So we say in the Vishnu Sahasranama is described the Lord of the senses, the Lord of the demigods. So, although he is the Lord of everything, is specifically specifically pointed out, so that he's the Lord of certain entities. So it's particularly pointed out the senses, because we generally think that my senses are for me to enjoy, and here that he's the Lord of the demigods, because it is a common misconception that the demigods are independent gods. And it's commonly considered that Vishnu is one of the gods. And that therefore Vishnu is not supreme. Or even if he is supreme, it's sometimes thought that even if Vishnu is supreme, he's supreme in the sense that prime minister or president of a country is supreme. He's not that much bigger or better than the others, and he's basically of the same category as everyone else. But that he is the Lord of the demigods is established here. Now this name also links with Hrishikesha, because the demigods have different functions within the universe. So all the functions of the senses, they have different demigods connected with them. Some demigods may be connected with more than one. The function, just like poor digestion in Ayurveda is called mandagni, or low, poor fire. Because the fire, we think of Agni, the Lord of the deity, well, Agni means fire, so Agni Deva, or sometimes just called Agni as the Lord of Fire. But fire doesn't just mean what we think of as burning, but there are different, the burning with flames, but any kind of burning. So just like acid is burning, and the acid in the stomach is also meant to burn. If you have too much acid, then it literally can literally burn a hole in your stomach wall. But it's meant for burning up or dissolving by acidic action the foodstuff that arrives in the stomach. So if the fire is not strong enough, then indigestion or poor digestion results. So there are different kinds of fires which are presided over and non-different from Agni. But it is Vishnu who gives the life and power to all the demigods. So when it's said that he's the Lord of all the demigods, it doesn't just mean that they pray to him when they get into trouble. But it means that their functions that they perform, they're only able to do so because of him, which is the important lesson we learn from Purusha Sukta. That only when the Purusha, Vishnu, entered into the universe could all the demigods perform their functions. So the demigods, they are given functions to perform, connected with creation, destruction, maintenance, and everything goes on in the world under the supervision of some demigod, but they are all supervised ultimately by and empowered by Vishnu. Okay, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. Short class. Any questions about this? Yeah.
Are there also primary names amongst those associates of Vishnu?
Are there primary names among the names of Vishnu? Well, some of the primary names of Vishnu are there. The concept of primary names and secondary names, as far as I know, this was not raised, or this concept was formulated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The Madhva Sampradaya would not agree to this at all. They'd be very angry at this, I would presume, because they don't accept that. They say all the forms of Vishnu are equal, and you can't say one's more than another, which is actually what we say also. We just say that different forms, they exhibit more potency than others. But primary names and prominent names. Padmanabha is a prominent name. Amara Prabhu is not a prominent name. We see the name Padmanabha is used often in Shastra. Murari is a very prominent name, for instance. I mean, there are so many, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur especially identifies prominent names in terms of the names of Krishna, which relate to his sweet pastimes. And names which we may not find here. Gopinath. You don't find that name here. So, anything else?
Guru Maharaj, in connection with Hrishikesha and master of the demigods, who is actually controlling our senses? Is Krishna is doing this through?
Krishna is doing through the demigods, yeah. The demigods are doing it. Who is doing it? Well, it's not a very difficult thing to understand. It's just like there's a king in a state, and a magistrate punishes someone. He does it on behalf of the king, so it's as good as the king doing it. There's a funny way of saying if someone's in prison in Britain, they may say, "Well, I just came out. I was a guest of Her Majesty for the last 2 years." Means you're in prison. You're imprisoned by Her Majesty's government. It's not that Queen Elizabeth personally put you in prison, or that she personally hosted you in Buckingham Palace, but it's a way of saying I was a guest of the Queen for the last 2 years. It means you're in prison. So the Queen's never heard of you, and but it's understood. It's all done in the name of all the legal matters in the country, and taxation and all the matters of governance are done in the name of and on behalf of the Queen, who is supposed to be the representative of God, which is why they're supposed to do that. Although Prabhupada said that actually there shouldn't be a queen, it's not allowed. There should be a king, not a queen. But so who's doing it? The demigods? Yeah, the demigod. Who's locking you up in the prison? The prison warden. But how, on what authority is he doing that? That's derived from the government, who theoretically derive their power from the Queen. Well, not anymore, because it's a constitutional monarchy. But originally that was understood, that it's all coming from God, because the king is the representative of God, and the governmental representatives are representatives of the king. Now it's all broken down, and it all works on what they call the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, which they say it is self-evident that all humans are born equal and they all have the right to own property and so many things like that. But previously it was thought that no one had a right to own property. The king was, in one sense, the proprietor. You can't sell land. There's no question of owning land. Land is there for everyone to use according to their need. So not that you can claim anything to be your own. So the United Nations Charter of Human Rights is basically born out of enlightenment, so-called enlightenment atheism. And they presume that what they say to be right, and they want to foist it on everyone else in the world. While they're talking of equal rights, but their very talking of it doesn't give the same right to others who have a completely different value system. Yeah.
From our side, we just directly approach Krishna. We bypass the demigods.
We bypass the demigods?
Yeah, we take shelter for
we take shelter of Krishna, yeah. We don't go via the demigods. What's the need? Just like when Srila Prabhupada was asked, "Do you ever go to see the demigods?" And Srila Prabhupada became somewhat angry and said, "Why should I go to see the demigods? Rather, the demigods will come to see me." If you're an intimate friend, Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if you're an intimate friend of the king, then why will you go to see the ministers? Rather, they will come to you if they want anything. Not that if you need anything, you don't go to the ministers, you just go to the king, and he'll tell the ministers what to do. So why should we go to the demigods? We offer them respect. We don't disrespect them, but what need? That's only for petty people. They go to the ministers. If you have a direct relationship with the king, then what do you bother with the ministers for? So why should we bother with the demigods? Offer them respect, but not that much. That is Vidhi Mahindra Dishchakitayate. One who has got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sees Brahma and Indra as like little insects. That's a good example to put. I mean, in your Tamil Bhagavad Darshanam, you have to, practically every issue you should have something in one way or other about the demigods, because it's, you know, such a major issue that it's like you have to keep on. So that, building on that anecdote, you could write a whole article. That anecdote of Srila Prabhupada being asked whether he goes to see the demigods. Have you heard that recording?
Yeah.
It's so funny the way, Prabhupada, do you sometimes go to see the demigod? Prabhupada immediately finds, right, why? Why should I go to the demigod? They'll come to see me. Again! Yeah, anything else? Oh, that's another important point. Prabhupada would give names. Brahma, Ishvara is Agnidev. Srila Prabhupada gave disciple the name. Brahma, Agnidev. Many names of Shiva Prabhupada gave. So that's another important to understand. It's that the name Agni, for instance, is actually a name of Vishnu. It's not that, because the function of Agni, to burn, is a function. Actually, everything is done by Vishnu. But that demigod is given that particular function to perform within the universe. So Indra means the king or the lord. So that's actually the name of Vishnu. So we think that names like Indra, Chandra, Vayu, they're all names of demigods, but they're borrowed names. Because we're used to calling demigods by such names, we think that those names belong to them, but they're borrowed names. They're actually names of Vishnu. Yeah, anything else?
And if somebody would ask, what is the harm? We have clear order, but on the side we can keep some devatas.
On the side we can keep devatas. What's the harm? The harm in keeping demigods on the side is that it diverts your attention. Why should you go to the demigods? When bhakti should be ananya cheta satatam, without diversion to anything else. And if you're going to keep the demigods, well, which demigods? Why anyone in particular? Or even if you have 50 or 100 demigods, still there are plenty more. So why have you chosen these ones? It's a concession to your own material attachments. That's what it is. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.